Go wild with Nation Gear's end of regular season merch madness sale. Nation Gear is offering our favorite fans 20% off all regular season merch, and we're going to give you free shipping on any orders over $200. Stock up your closet for the playoffs, rep your team, and grab that merch you've been eyeing up all season long. Don't wait. This sale only lasts from April 1st until April 7th. Shop the sale at nationgear.ca.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
You're listening to Nasty Knuckles, the Hockey Outlaws podcast, with your host, Derek Nasty Suttermeyer, and former Philadelphia Flyer enforcer Riley Cote, as they go behind the scenes with your favorite NHL players. This week's guest is former Philadelphia Flyer and one tough son of a bitch, Josh Bratton. Time to face off.
All right, welcome back to another episode of Nasty Knuckles. What is going on, Nasty?
What's up, Regs? How you doing, brother?
Doing well, brother. Looking good in that sweet-ass jersey you're rocking.
Whoa,
there.
What, this whole thing?
Oh, things fresh off the press.
44.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, you know. Not bad. It can be available here soon.
Yeah.
For everyone.
Beauty. You rock it well.
Thanks, brother.
Yeah. Well, how about them Flyers? What's going on with them?
Well, they lost 3 of 4 here. I didn't expect them dropping two of three to Pitt, to be honest with you. I mean, you never know. It's the NHL. Anything can happen. But, you know, then they had a tough one last night. I don't know really what's going on. They lost, like I said, they lost 3 of 4. They do have some games at hand. I think tomorrow night they're very happy to see Buffalo coming in.
Yeah.
Not the crap on Buffalo, but they just look like a team that doesn't even want to play hockey to me. And I've never played the game, as we know, but they just look disinterested to me. So hopefully that gets the boys get a big win tomorrow and get the ball rolling the right way again.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, the worst thing it can do is take Buffalo lightly. You know, they seem to be a little bit of a fragile team right now, but you know, you can't underestimate them. They have a good night and you have a bad night, and then all of a sudden it's a different story. So they got to somehow get back on the right track. I just feel like there's holes in their game. There's too many gaps with their defensemen. You know, some sloppy plays. I don't know. There's inconsistencies, especially yesterday's game. You know, when first period was great, and then all of a sudden, they weren't even exactly trading chances. They were just giving, you know, Washington, specifically Ovechkin, you know, 3 or 4 chances there, which is not a good thing, obviously, and then eventually capitalizes. I don't know. There just seems to be a disconnect, say, maybe on the defense a little bit more. If some of these forwards are not really contributing enough, in my opinion. There's a few holes there, you know. I don't know what your thoughts are there, but certainly need to be better all around.
Yeah, I think they can be, and you know how it is too. I mean, sometimes this is a way different time than normal obviously with the COVID and everything, the way things have gone. But, you know, sometimes you get into a little bit of a lull. I don't think there should be one right now. Obviously, it's you're only, 23 games in. But I think they'll be – I'm sticking by what I've said from the get-go. I just think they're too good of a team. Teams do go through little funks, and hopefully that last week was just that, and they can get back in the win column tomorrow. And like you said, you can't take anyone lightly in this league. Buffalo's coming in, and you've got Taylor Hall, who you signed, I think, to $5 million. You got Skinner on the books for $9 million, if I'm not mistaken. And, you know, you got your captain, Jack Eichel. Those guys get hot. Now you got to look out, you know, but they just can't seem to get hot at all. I think they've got three goals between the three of them, and that could be the wrong stat, but I'm pretty sure that's what I read. Anyway, so hopefully they get a big win tomorrow. And like you said, it seems like there's a lot of switching of the partners, a lot of switching of the lines. And I know guys were sick, so it did kind of, throw a curveball, obviously, at the coaches and what they need to do. But on the D side of things, it seems like they're switching every night. It's a different six, you know. And I know it's only usually one, but it still probably throws one guy off that was playing with, say, Robert Hägg. You were playing with him. Well, now he's out of the lineup. Last night, Gustafsson came in, and he hadn't played in a while. I don't know. I'm no coach. I'm no GM. I just wonder if that has anything to do with it. Just not being able to get comfortable with people you're playing with. So maybe that's it.
Yeah, you know, it's there's I think there's even more there to than just that. I do agree with you. I think there's a couple guys that just need to be better, and you know, the chemistry, just the lack of defending at times. I go back to the first Pittsburgh game. It was like an emotional game, right? I mean, it's the first time they played Pittsburgh since Friedman had been traded there. I think there was some, like, you know, some extra juice there, and you know, give Fried some credit. You know, he definitely he played hard, and you know, drew some penalties there, and you know, and he was effective. I think both those two games that he played. You know, I think that first game the Flyers put up like 37 shots, which was more than enough shots to win the game. But again, just a little loose there, and then Pittsburgh capitalizing on their opportunities. But and then the game they win, the second game, you know, G's the hero. It was nice to see G score a couple goals. Be a leader there. But I just feel like maybe it's his surrounding cast, there's just not enough juice and not consistent juice. I mean, JVR seems to be going. Farabee seems to be going. A couple of these guys are a little bit hot and cold. TK, in my opinion, he needs to be better. You say Jake. I mean, a couple of these guys just need a little bit more juice from, you know, some of these more veteran guys. That's just my opinion, what I see. You know, again, you go play Washington, and you got Ovi flying around. I mean, you can't let that guy get, I don't know how many shots he finished with. It was at least eight. He was probably in the Baker's dozen there when it was all said and done. Yeah. But, you know, I don't know. They just need to just tighten up and find some consistency. I know they got, you know, some younger defense. But I do like Ghost's game for the most part the last few games. He seems to be more involved and, you know, making some crisp plays. But you know, that being said, there's still some disconnect on the defending portion of it, but we'll see. You know, Buffalo comes in, they got to have a big game. That's just the bottom line. You cannot drop that game. You cannot. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about that. So we'll see how that goes, and we'll recap this next week. Moving on to the rest of the NHL, a couple will highlight real goals with Barzal and a couple other beauties. No question. But what I wanted to talk about was a couple of these hits. You know, you talk about Tom Wilson. He gets 7-game suspension, which, in my opinion, he deserved. I mean, he's a repeat offender. I think 5 suspensions you'd mentioned before we got on, and two fines in the last how many years. But that was a blatant headshot, right? I mean, he deserved that. I mean, and he's notoriously doing that type of thing. So I think the NHL made the right call. What do you think?
Yeah, I do. I do on that one. I like, don't get me wrong, man. I love Tom Wilson's game.
Me too.
You're looking for him. if you're playing D, you're playing forward, he's kind of like what we talked about Zach Ronaldo when we talked to Reno. He can hit. That hit is obviously a hit you don't want to see on anyone, but he is a physical guy. He answers the bell.
Yeah.
He ended up fighting Tenorti the other night.
And Frederick.
But I just feel like that hit, he didn't have – it looked like he didn't even hit any of his body. It looked like he just hit his head, and I feel like he came from far enough away that he could have either lowered himself or – and again, I didn't play. I can't even imagine what the speed you guys play at now. It's got to be tough, but that one was, I think, deserved. And then you had the Connor Murphy hit yesterday, which I just feel like that's a good hit. I mean,
that's as clean as you're going to find in today's game.
Yeah. I don't even know if he hit him in the face, to be honest. From the one angle, it looks like he did. But when they show from the opposite, it looks like he hits him right in the chest. And I know his body comes up, but I mean,
I don't think that.
Definitely didn't headhunt him.
No, there was no headhunting. It wasn't a deliberate, even if it did touch his face, I still don't think it did. I mean, that was as clean as you're going to find in today's game. Tom Wilson's was just unnecessary. You know what I mean? He could have just rubbed that guy out. You know what I mean? Yeah. And had no issues at all.
He could have gotten the puck. And he's a good player, too, Tom.
He really
is. Tom Wilson's a good hockey player.
Yeah, he's the X factor for sure.
You know, but. Back to Connor Murph. I feel like some of the issue is this guy skating behind the net with his head down with the puck.
Yeah,
like I mean, I know people are gonna say, "Well, he's a defenseless player." Well, he's defenseless because he's not looking. He doesn't have his head up, which you're taught as a kid. You know that. You come flying around the net like that. I mean. Yeah. You know, it wasn't the Steve Downey hit in Ottawa his rookie year where Dean McCammon, he damn near decapitated Dean McCammon, and it was a late hit. This was, to me, it looked like a hockey hit and a clean hit.
Yeah.
I don't think he left. Someone said, oh, he left his feet. I didn't think he left his feet. I could be wrong. I don't know.
Yeah. No,
I don't think that deserves a suspension, and I'm not sure what ended up happening there, if something did or not, but I don't think anything's happened yet.
Yeah, no, I think, I mean, again, that's a clean hockey play, in my opinion. I mean, being a guy that would be on the forecheck looking for a big hit, I mean, that's as clean as it's going to get, right? Like you said, like, yes, part of the onus of the puck carrier is to be responsible with their head up and not putting themselves in vulnerable positions. And then, you know, as the forechecker, you're kind of coached or trained to, say, take advantage of guys putting themselves in bad positions, obviously within the confines of the rules in the game. But to me, it's like I would have blown that guy up 100 times out of 100. There's no question. And again, the shoulder, from what I saw, went right through his chest cavity. And if there's any momentum that pulled him upwards and off his feet, I'm not sure that was an actual jump. It was just the momentum. Because when you blow someone up and you go through someone like that, you know, your body is almost flies because there's no resistance. But I take that hit over and over and over again, and unfortunately got penalized for it. But you know, he didn't. I don't think he got suspended as of now. But we will see. We need more. We need more hits. You know, we need more clean hits. You know, I think we've gone so far away from like, oh, every hit is a hitting guy in a vulnerable position. Every hit is a headshot. I don't agree with that. But you got to take care of, you know, the players, and there's a player safety element, obviously. But to see a nice physical play like that and then get penalized, it kind of just deters guys from making those plays, you know? So we got to find a happy medium, in my opinion.
Connor Murphy's the furthest thing from a dirty hockey player.
Yeah, exactly, right.
Also, I mean, I don't know if he's ever been suspended. I don't know him that well, but I know he's not a dirty player. I know him a little bit from his dad. You know, his dad was here coaching.
That's right.
And dad played the game for a long time. And Connor's not a dirty player. I know that. And so I don't know. But other thing I wanted to bring up real quick was Daryl Sutter being back in the league.
Oh, yeah, right? Oh,
unbelievable. A little different flavor. I thought he was done. I thought he had enough.
You would think so, right? go scare the shit out of a bunch of other hockey players in Calgary now, man. Oh, my God. I mean, it's going to be a different animal for them. I feel bad. You know, they better start winning some games. It's going to be a long rest of the season, I'll tell you what.
If I heard one of the things I've met Daryl a few times, obviously, but I don't know him. But I heard from a few players that were in when he got to L.A., something that I think some guys don't want to hear, but I think if you want to have a successful team and be a real team, I think it's something that needs to be done. And what he did when he came in there and took over for Terry Murray that year, they ended up winning the cup. It was Richie's Mike Richards and Jeff Carter were there that year, that first year. But he came in and pulled every single player in his office and said, "Here's your role.
Yeah.
If you don't like it, you know, we'll find somewhere for you to go play or we'll send you down." And I mean, you know, he sat a guy down that maybe thinks they're a third line or a second line player and said, "No, you're fourth line, and that's your role for this team, and we need you to do it. And if you can't, you're not going to play."
Yeah.
Bottom line. I mean, to me, I think I love that. Like, yeah, if I was a coach in basketball and hockey, whatever, I think your players need to know your role, because sometimes there is, you know, like maybe some questions, you know, about, you know, you, Riles, you maybe think, well, I should be on the third line. I'm better than this guy or that guy. No, this is where you're playing. This is the role we want you in. Bottom line. Yeah. Boom. So interesting. We probably could talk to Zach and find out.
Yeah, we'll get him back on.
But I just heard that years ago, and I just thought it's a way guys, you're going to hurt some guys' feelings probably, but at the end of the day, they won the Stanley Cup, and they did it 2 out of 3 years or whatever it was. And he's, I don't know. I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, and it sounds like such a simple thing, right? It's like, oh, you think that every coach would just lay out your role, and you know, this is what you're expected to do. The irony of it is that it doesn't really happen that way. I think there's a lot of, like you said, there's a lot of gray area with these players and what they think and what they think, you know, how they evaluate their play and where they think they should be, you know, in these moments, because they're not necessarily being honest with themselves. But you know, Sutter has obviously been proven to be an honest guy, brutally honest at times. But, you know, the fact is like something as simple as, okay, let's define the player's role as well. It's like, oh, big shocker, the coach would do that. I mean, a lot of coaches don't necessarily have that exact conversation. It's kind of like, oh, you're slotting in the top two lines in the 3 and 4 for now. And, you know, but then, you know, if you're going to be a contender and win, it's like you might have to take a lesser role and play a little bit more minimalized role and be okay with that. I mean, it seems logical that any coach would do that, but it has a huge impact when it's like a very firm voice looking you right in the eye, probably a death stare, and saying, this is what you're doing, and if you don't like it, like you said, you can go somewhere else. We'll find somewhere else for you. So you either buy in or you go away, you know? So I think the shelf life of a guy like that is a lot less than maybe more of a player's coach. But that being said, he wins. You know, he wins early. Yeah. He gets the team, at least turns the team around. I don't know, I'm not sure in Calgary's situation how much, you know, turning around there is to do exactly with that team. But they'll have a different look, a different energy for sure. I'm sure a guy like Reno will, you know, not that he's not juicing it up already, but you know what I mean? Once he gets in there, he might come in with a little more fire. No, it'd be interesting how that one plays out.
You know, you said it is hard. Some guys don't want to hear something like that, you know. It could be the way they've been brought up their whole life. They've been, you know, pampered a bit. You know, there's some guys that have, some guys that haven't, but a great example is Scotty Lawton,
right?
When he was, you know, he's in NHL and they're like, look, we think you're going to be best for this organization if you go down and you learn how to play in all situations, a penalty kill, be a fourth line player. He did it like a pro. He's made it back, and he's even better.
Right.
You know, you can move lots up and down the lineup.
100%.
He's proven that. He scores big goals. And he, that just reminds me of somebody that can handle that and took – and he got sit down. It wasn't even like you're on the fourth line, suck it up, or we're getting rid of you. He literally went down, worked his bag off, and, you know, he's a very important player for the Flyers, man. He really is. And, you know, he was willing to do that. So anyway.
Yeah, for sure. It's humbling, right? Especially you're a first rounder and you've notoriously been the goal scorer and the go-to guy. Then all of a sudden, the coach or the GM is having this heart-to-heart conversation with you saying that you need to go down to the minors and become a checker. You know, go learn how to play defense and learn how to play a solid checking game. It's humbling, but if you have the right attitude, like Lotz did, you know, you come back up. We knew you had the offensive ability, you know, the speed and the quickness and that. But when you're in your mind, you're like, well, I got to be a first round pick and I got to be this, you know, top two line guy right out of the gates. It's a lot of pressure to put on yourself, and you're not focusing on defense and you're not checking well. And then you're not scoring enough. And then obviously when you're not scoring enough, you're not checking well enough. It's like, you're not going to be in the lineup. Yeah. So, but nice to see him come, you know, come full circle and back up with a right attitude and really, really improve his game. You know, the value of his game has improved overall, 200-foot game. And, you know, like you said, he can move up and down the lineup and he fits right in and he brings some energy. So nice to see.
Yeah, it is. All right, Riggs, let's get into our interview with Josh Gratton, which is brought to you by DraftKings Sportsbook. It's that time of year again. Conference tournaments are tipping off. Bubble teams are making their final push for a bid while the top seeds are preparing for what they hope is a long run. DraftKings Sportsbook, America's top-rated sportsbook app, is putting new customers in the center of the action. Bet $4 on an underdog, win $256 if they win. It's that simple. That's bet $4 on an underdog in select college basketball games, and if they win, you collect $256. The bank is open, baby. Just like when Nasty's taking a jumper. Bang! In the net. Don't even hit the rim, boys. Anyway, pick one of many select college basketball underdogs for your shot at winning $256. All it takes is a $4 bet. There's no better way to put your college basketball knowledge to the test than to put your money where your mouth is with DraftKings Sportsbook. Don't worry if college basketball isn't for you. DraftKings Sportsbook offers great odds and promotions on golf, hockey, and so much more. DraftKings is safe, secure, and reliable, so you can deposit and withdraw your funds at your convenience. Download the top-rated DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use promo code Knuckles when you sign up to turn $4 into $256 if the underdog of your choosing pulls off the upset. That's code Knuckles to turn $4 into $256 for a limited time only at DraftKings Sportsbook. Must be 21 or older, Pennsylvania only, new customers only. Restrictions apply in partnership with Meadows Racetrack and Casino. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Welcome back to another episode of Nasty Knuckles. I'm Riley Cote.
And I'm Derek Suttlemeyer. And this week we have a great guest, our good buddy, absolute warrior, Josh Gratton.
What's up, Grat?
How's it going, boys? Thanks for having me on.
No problem, man. Thanks for coming, bro.
It's good to see you. Looking good.
Yeah, feeling good. Feeling good. How about you guys? How you been?
Yeah, been good. Yeah, I can't complain.
Not bad, brother. Not bad. You're pretty damn jacked, Josh. Seen some pictures lately, brother. What have you been up to, man?
Not much. Just working out quite a bit. Staying in shape. I wish I had did this when I was playing.
Yeah, you and me both. I was fat. About 15 pounds overweight. Yeah, you're looking good, brother. I know you've put in a lot of work over the last how many years, you know, your physical health, but I think you've, you know, taken your mental health to a whole other level. So congrats on all that. I mean, obviously it's a never-ending journey, but you're looking mighty healthy.
Yeah, it was a little rough go there when I finished playing, but I went through some dark times. I've been on the other side of that now and working through it day by day and taking care of myself off the ice and away from everything else and worry about myself more or less on a daily basis, which is nice. So,
yeah, for sure. And do you find that some of that came from just not knowing, you know, when you're in the hockey world, you kind of like, well, maybe you don't know next year where you're going to play, but you know you're going to play. Was it a little bit about the uncertainty of where you were going, you think?
Yeah, I think a lot was the fear of unknown for sure. That's that was a big part of it. And just being a creature habit and having that routine and hockey to fall back on and when it was gone and all the uncertainty, it definitely put the stress levels up to an all-time high, and I coped and took did the wrong things for my body, my mind, and I had to learn the hard way, unfortunately. But now I've reached out and I've had help with through even yourself helping me through a lot of stuff with the plant medicine and advice in general. It's really helped me through a lot of stuff. So it's all about getting through it day by day and reaching out to the connections. And I felt like at first it was I kind of isolated myself, which is probably the wrong thing to do at that time. And I've learned from my mistake, and now it's time to pay it forward to other people. So it's good.
Nice. That's good. It's really good advice. I mean, you're not going to help anybody if you keep, too quiet, you know, about it. It's like, it's a good thing. It's a normal thing to want to ask for help. And I think that should be good advice to young children and, you know, the youth and even adults. You know, people are too proud sometimes. And I was guilty for it as well. And I think part of what you went through too, and I went through a little bit, is like a little bit of an identity crisis. I mean, you were a tough guy. You had a very identified role in a hockey club. And then all of a sudden it's like, okay, well, I'm not that anymore. I'm no longer a hockey player. Now what am I? And there's a little bit of soul searching. I know I went through that personally, which is difficult, you know. You have to transition the way you think and kind of recreate yourself, if you will. So I'm happy to hear that you've been able to figure that out, because a lot of guys don't, unfortunately. So the fact that you're saying paying it forward and being of service is super important to help our fellow brethren out, you know, because there's so many guys struggling out there. It's sad, really.
That's it. And for myself, it's a big thing is when I hear from other guys that went through it and got through the dark times, and you can relate to them to the extent of almost to a T of some of the things that people go through that I went through. So when you see that and you have hope, you get some hope from guys that have already battled through it. And that's kind of what I'm hoping to do for other guys that are going to go through the exact same thing I went through, and they see that I got through it, or they see like when I was following you, or other guys that have been through a lot of stuff and problems and issues that got through it. It's the way you went through it and progressed and thrived in all your business adventures and everything like that. It's definitely gave me confidence and hope moving forward. So it's really good to have that for myself to look through and see that.
Nice.
Yeah, for sure, man. That's really good. It's good to see, man. I didn't probably when you were, you know, grats, when you started going overseas and playing near the end there the last few years, like it was hard to keep in touch with you, obviously. But I didn't know until recently about you were having some problems, obviously, and it's got to be tough. I can't imagine, especially with the roles both of you guys played. I can't pretend to know, you know, something about that. I never played, obviously played the game, just been around it my whole life. But even for me, I've been out a year now. And again, I didn't go through anything like you two having to do for a job, which is just a crazy thing. But it was tough on me mentally. Still is a little bit. So it's tough. I can only imagine what you were going through, Riles. You know, I know a lot about Riles, but proud of you, man, and glad to see you doing so well.
I appreciate it. And yeah, again, I appreciate the support, and now on the other side of things. So it's in the rear view now, and I'm looking forward to the future. So it's all good.
Beauty. Well, that's, I mean, obviously important stuff to talk about, but let's turn the tune a little bit and talk about, you know, what you're doing now. And let's talk about, you know, your hockey career, because it's pretty fascinating and remarkable how you're able to extend your career and play so long and be basically touring the world playing hockey. So why don't you tell us a little bit about what you're doing now, and we'll get into some of the hockey stories.
Yeah, I was fortunate enough to play 16 years, and now I'm on the other side of the game. I got a coaching job offer here in December, and to coach the USPHL team here in Potomac, and it's so far so good. It was tough to walk into. It was a bad team that I got handed, but you know what? I've learned a lot from my first couple months here, and now it's on to the recruiting process and building my own team and putting my stamp on an organization, which I'm really excited for. So, yeah, that's just the season ended a week ago, and it was a pretty long year with the team that I walked into. Great kids, and I had a lot of fun. It was just not the most competitive team, so it was a long year in that sense. But again, I've learned a lot from the year and learned what I want to do moving forward. So it's exciting. I'm excited. I'm excited to be a part of this organization, and it's a great spot for myself.
That's awesome. Grats, do you find yourself, you know, as a player back in the day, I'm sure there were many times where you got the coach chirping and you're like, go fuck yourself, you know, under your breath, or maybe even to him, and now you're on that side of it and you're like, what the fuck's going on with these kids, man? They don't listen. How hard is it to get the puck in deep? How many times are you told that, just get it in? And you're like, fuck you. You know, now you're the bench boss and the boss running the place, man. What's that like?
It's funny you say that, because I was thinking to myself after the first five games, I was like, holy shit, John Stevens must have fucking hated me. I meant hated dealing with a guy like myself. Like, never know what you're going to get coming to the rink. Is he going to show up tonight or is he not? So I meant that actually went through my head my first five games, and they're like, holy, all the personalities that the coaches had to deal with. I almost felt bad for them dealing with myself and all the guys that I would be around on our team. But it's definitely an experience, a learning curve. You don't just have to worry about one personality. You have to worry about 22 other kids and personalities and teenagers and attitudes. So it is a process and a journey at the same time to build these kids. But at the same time, you see them thrive and you start seeing things building and them listening. You get a lot of satisfaction out of helping these young kids. But some of them come into the rink, whether they want to be there or they don't. You got to try to make them be there. It reminds me of how many times Johnny Stevens or coaches must have been like, what's Gratz doing last night? What is he doing last night? You know
what I mean? Were the boys running? That's it. Nah, were the boys running? Well, I was with them. No, they weren't.
Yeah.
Just some water and a little dinner, and we were done.
Yeah,
it's funny.
I put the A535 on so I didn't smell like booze when I showed
up. Yeah, right? It's funny you say that. Like, I would imagine, I don't know if you know this, Gratz, but I was pretty successful this year with my Chipmunk League ball hockey team. My son was on it, Elvis.
Yeah.
Champs. Anyway, not a big deal. I'm figuring I'm waiting on some calls. Maybe you need a good assistant. I come in. I won't try to overstep your, you know, and take over your role.
Good assistant, Nasty. I know you'd definitely bring light to the table. Sure.
Well, what I was going to ask you is, like, you said, you know, you got 22 guys you're worried about. Do you find yourself having to deal with this guy differently? As in, you both know, like, sometimes you got to pat a guy, and then there's some guys you got to be like, let's fucking go. You know, like, is that hard because there's so many different personalities?
Yeah, it definitely is, especially at the teenager age, that way, and attitudes, and people, a lot of them think they're entitled here and there. Not in a bad way, just the way they were brought up in the coaching world, and some of them hadn't been coached properly to my liking, or maybe they don't like the way I coach. It's all personality management, and you got to pick and be careful who you're harder on, and sometimes you got to give the guy a slap in the ass and get him going. And that's being my first 3-4 months of being a head coach. It's learning a lot. It's more myself learning, because I have never really been through it before. So I guess it's a process, and I'm excited to do it. I love coming to the rink every day, and I love interacting with these kids, and they're making my life way better. Me being a mentor and trying to teach them the game the way I played it is, it's a little different now than when we played back in the day with me and Riles, but it's still the element of getting kids, getting them going and motivated. It's still the same. So it's exciting and it's fun.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. There's definitely a few things for change, hey, as far as like those ingredients you're talking about. And then it's just really about how to communicate that to the players. And everyone, you know, knows about hard work and, you know, some of these superficial expectations. But I think like getting the most out of the players, and it really comes down to communication and how you, you know, connect with that guy, because everyone's so different. Like you said, that stuff will never change, right? I mean, it's just like what the coach's job is to do, you know. Yeah. And I think you're a good role model overall, because you were a worker, you know, grunt worker. You've learned the hard way. You've done, you know, just like myself, you've done a lot of things the wrong way and still were able to be, you know, successful. You know, and if you think about like things you could have changed, you know, you could take that information and help these guys out. So it's important stuff, you know.
Yeah, that's a big thing, is especially guys like yourself and I, we've been through the ringer and back, so we can teach them more what not to do than what to do right.
Exactly, right?
Yeah, so
that's the truth, yeah, what not to do.
Yeah.
how not to be a pro athlete.
Yeah. Perfect example, Josh.
Yeah. So let's talk about old grats, just the grats that, you know, I remember playing, and I'm just talking more on like the hockey side of things. You know, the first time where we played together was in 2004-05 with the Phantoms, the lockout, and we won the Calder Cup together. You know, I know you played maybe half a season in the American Hockey League before that, and you signed with the Flyers, you know, that offseason. Talk about your experience in Philly and that first year specifically with Nasty's on the team, obviously. We had an amazing team, tough team. What an experience that was.
Fuck, we had so much fun. I look back to that being the highlight of my career. And I won a championship in Manchester, but it did never, not even close to compare to that year that we won it in Philly. It was awesome. And so much fun. The group of guys we had, fuck, we had a lot of fun. Yeah, too much fun almost. But
yeah, right.
I remember we would go every Sunday, we would go after a win. Most of the time we'd win because we were so good, but we'd be right at McDaniels. I'd be the first one there and the last one to leave.
No way.
Yeah. Yeah. What a place, though.
And Danny Moore.
Danny Moore, that's it.
Saw him a few times this summer, Gratz. Saw him a few times. Yeah, yeah. He opened up a dojo, man.
No shit.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he's still bartending and everything, but yeah, he opened up a dojo and he's doing really well, man. But what a time, eh?
We're gonna have to get up there this summer and see you guys for sure.
Yeah, fuck, you're close.
Yeah, that was an awesome time. We had a lot of fun, man. I lived with Ben Eager that year, and me and Eags, that place was something else. Coming in and out of that place, but it was a lot of fun.
Riles, the year before we got you. Congrats, it was 2003-04. He started the year in the coast, I think in San Diego.
Yeah,
that's right.
And I think in 30 games, I think you racked up like 239 or 240 minutes. So obviously that got everyone's attention. I can't imagine, like, you're a young kid, but your mentality must have just been, I got to do this to get the, you know, not that you had to, because you weren't a bad hockey player either, to be honest. Like, none of you guys were. Like, to get to the level you ended up at, you're not a bad hockey player, but it's like Riles has said before, you kind of got to, this is the way I'm definitely going to get there, so I'm going to do it. I couldn't imagine, you know, in 30 games, you got 240 minutes, man. Like, you must have fought once to twice a night.
Yeah, like, it was a grind, but I was told, Steve Martinson was my coach. He was a tough guy back in the day, and
yep.
He said, the fastest way out of the East Coast is fight. So what I did is I went out there and I fought every game, every guy I would come on and challenge me, or I would be challenging them. And then I got called up to Cincinnati that year.
That's
and
where I first saw you.
Back and
we went in there, Riles. That's what I was going to say. So he had been in San Diego, and we get to Cincy, and he had been there maybe a couple weeks. And you know how the word spreads, tough guy. So we knew about Gratz, never seen him, never met him. We had called Les Borsheim up, our buddy. He's out in Colorado now. Had an unfortunate accident. I don't know if you knew about that, Josh.
Yeah,
on a motorcycle, yeah. But he's doing great, man. He's working his ass off, and he's a huge inspiration for people, man. He gives it every day, man. But great guy. But anyway, Borsche unfortunately caught the wrong end of Gratz's fury there, I remember thinking to myself, like, this guy's a kid, and he's, you know, Borsche is a little older than you, big, tough, you know, obviously a tough guy. Maybe you even fought him before, I'm not sure, but, you know, you kind of caught him a couple times there, and Cat had to take him off the ice, and then you get out of the box, you got Pete Vandermeer tapping you on the shoulder. I'm just like, well, fucking what a way to, you know, of course, we saw it a lot more back then, but, you know, it was crazy. I think 21 games, you put up basically 70 minutes in PIMS. And then next year we signed you and we're like, yes, like this guy is meant to be a Phantom/Flyer. You know, you fit in great. And what a team, like you guys were saying. You got Riley, you got Divvy, Ben Eager, yourself. Yeah. I mean, a lot of middleweight tough guys too on that team. Ryan Reddy, Even Murph, like Murph would Murph, chuck yeah. him when he yeah. had to. I mean, there was a ton of guys. Right? Yeah. Oh, we had Fridge. I forget. Yeah. How do you forget Fridge?
I would have to hear. Yeah. Fridge. Yeah. But yeah, we had a really tough team.
And that, you guys. It was.
What's that?
Right.
That league that year, like the American League that year, was full of meat. Every team had three or four guys.
Oh, yeah.
Man. There's, if you didn't have every, like, I think you probably had almost 40 fights. I had 30 of there or something like that. Like, there must have been two or three fights a game.
Crazy.
Yeah, we were active. We were young guys, right, too, between yourself, Eags, and myself. You know, Fridgie is obviously already established, but there was a lot of other hungry young guys in the league, Brian McGrattan and Colton Orr, you know what I mean? And there was like just a lot of young blood that, you know, again, it was the best league in the world at that time because the NHL wasn't going on. It was super, super competitive and what a year that was. I mean, I just looked back and we didn't have anybody in the top 20 scoring. We were just like scoring by committee. But again, like, you know, solid goaltending, Nitti and Litz and defense all the way out to the forwards. And, you know, a lot of these guys, I mean, most of these guys hadn't established themselves in the NHL yet. I mean, besides Yoni Pittkinen maybe had played a year.
Like, if you look back at that team, I think we had probably 10 or 12 guys that probably have played over 700 games in the NHL. Right. I would say at least close to that anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. Hell of a team.
We had Karts and Rick come up and pretty much put us over the top for that playoff.
Yeah. What a couple pickups that ended up being. I think Jeff led us in scoring, if I'm not mistaken, in the playoffs.
Yeah.
I mean, Nitti couldn't be scored on. I mean, like, the guy was, especially in the finals. I know we talked about this. I can't remember who it may have been with Mike Richards. We were talking about that first game in Chicago, game one. They came out just flying. And, you know, we hadn't played them, so you don't really know a whole lot. You know they're good. They got a good team. They had some good pickups. You know, at the deadline, that didn't seem fair actually because they picked those guys up from another. Yeah.
Was it Bomeister and Weiss, right?
Yeah, right. So they picked them up. But I remember that first period, they must have had 4 to 5, like 2-on-1, 3-on-1s, and Nitti just kept everything out of the net. And I remember Ben Stafford, Ducky, coming out after the first period, and I was doing someone's skates, and he just gave me a look like, holy fuck, like, these guys are good. And then, you know, we got our legs underneath us and end up winning that game. I don't know if that game was the overtime game or game two was, but either way, we won like 2-1 or 1-0. I don't even know what it was, but I remember we've talked about this as well. You and Riley, the big crash line there against Scranton. We're down at home and we lose this game. We're down 3 going into the third, I believe, maybe 4. And you guys turned the game around, man. I mean, and Johnny was double. You guys are probably like, what the fuck is going on? We're playing a lot, man. Because he kept rolling. You guys were hot. Gratz, you scored a big goal. I mean, just everything. Just the whole team was a team.
Yeah.
And it was just so much fun to be a part of.
You remember when Nitti got pulled and then we came back? I think we almost might have tied it up. That he just grabbed all his stuff and just went right back out there.
Yeah. And then they got one late and we ended up losing out, but we won the next game against Providence, yeah. Right? Yep.
Good.
And Richie had actually gotten a fight with this kid ended up on the Bruins the next year. Oh man, I can't believe I can't remember his name.
But was it Bergeron?
They got suspended. It wasn't Bergeron, it was another skilled guy though. It wasn't Bergeron. It was a guy with like blondish hair. I remember Richie cut him, he was bleeding, looked like the Nature Boy Ric Flair with blonde locks bleeding, but yeah, what a team, man. You guys were awesome. It was so much, like you said, Gratz, it was so much fun.
Yeah. Good coaches too, Johnny and Craig Berube. They made it that much better for us, and they knew how to, they were players coaches, right? And guys wanted to play for them. So it was that much more enjoyable winning it and being part of it with those guys as well.
Yeah, we had Chief on, and he had some, you know, awesome stories. I think we lined up talking about you at one point. But, you know, between Chief and Johnny, I learned a lot from those guys too, whether I really recognize it in the moment or I look back and reflect on them as like, you know, just say people, but like, you know, character humans, right? I mean, I think Johnny, was one of the first coaches that I had that actually like sat me down and like talked to me like a human being, and you know, and you know, whether it was good or bad, or my play on the ice, he was at least trying to get inside my head and help me out, you know, just like that sense of compassion. And Chief was obviously just a good overall dude as far as like listening and, you know, being there. So you don't really, in the moment, you're kind of like, wow, you can maybe, you're almost spoiled, you know, that I've had a lot of coaches that aren't like that, you know. And yeah, I mean, the fact that we weren't able to go on and win the whole thing and have that team and that experience, you know, with the coaching staff, and not to mention Sammy. I mean, Shel Samuelson, I worked with him after the fact too, you know, learn a lot from these guys, you know. And again, when you're young and in the moment, you don't necessarily think you're learning anything. But I think when you look back and reflect, you learn a shitload. Yeah. And you know, it kind of creates your character, especially now you're in coaching too. I mean, I'm sure you can take a lot out of Johnny's book there too. And Chiefs.
I even Paul Holmgren as well. Like he was something else as well. I remember the first time I had signed and I came to Philly for that prospects camp in the summer or whenever, and I got there a day late, and Paul Holmgren's sitting in the cold tub up to his neck, right? Just sitting. I go in there and I thought it was a hot tub. Hey, I go, oh, how's the hot tub? Cold, kid. Straight face, didn't say anything. I was like, okay, I better go now.
Sitting good, up there. Good talk. Good talk. Yeah.
But yeah, he was really good to me as well. The whole organization in Philly was really good to me from the first day I got there till the second time I got traded. Like it's still, I wish I had got to play there a lot longer than I did. It was awesome.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun, man. I tell you what, I've told this story 100 times, Gratz, but 101 here. So many times you guys were dropping the mitts. Obviously, you knew that. But one of my favorites was you and Dennis Bonvey. And every game, Bones, what a good dude, man. I get to run into him once in a while, man. He just makes me laugh. But I'd never forget. I got to know him because he actually, before you guys, played with the Phantoms for, like, he got traded at the deadline.
That's right,
a few years before. And so I got to know him. So I would always go down and say hey to Bones, he would walk down the hallway. So I'm standing there, I was like, oh, you got the knuckles sharpened up tonight? You know, like just fucking with him. And he's like, oh, I can't go, my hands are hurting. Fuck, you guys dropped a puck, he's whacking. You guys are like dropping him. Like he's trying to act like he's not going to tilly. You know he's going to tilly. It's like, it's Bones, right? So anyway, you guys get into an unbelievable fight, just toe-to-toe, which that's how you fought. And, we come in, like, I mean, you guys just pounded each other. Great fight. Got all the boys going. Come in, and right away, like, as you guys go in the locker room, I take a quick turn. I go right to AP's office, the video coach, Adam Patterson. It's like, let's watch it. So there's, like, I think Tuna was in there with me, and, you know, like, we want to watch it. So he's got it in slow motion. You guys are throwing. He hits you one time in your nose, and your eyes don't shut. I've never seen anything like it. And your nose just like flattens, but you don't even go like this. You don't make any kind of moves. Your eyes are wide open, and then you catch him. And we're like, oh my God. Like, I don't know. I get tapped in the nose, and I'm like, my eyes get watery. You like took a full fledged punch right to your nose, and your eyes never shut. So the best is we watch it. You got tagged a few, like, you know, 5, 6, 7 times, whatever, and you tagged him about 20. But, come in, and I like give you a tap, and I was like, fuck, great tilt, you know. And you're like, thanks, you know, like, you don't have a mark on your face, which we've talked about 100 times. You just got punched in the face fucking 7 times, no marks. And you're like, I said, great tilt. And you're like, oh, thanks. He's like, he never even hit me. I was like, what? He never hit you? I said, he hit you about 7 times right in the face, like one time right in the nose. And you're like, pillows, boys, pillows. Never forget that. As I always say that, pillows, boys. Oh my God. But Riles, is tell him what you were talking about earlier about when he got cut.
Well, yeah, I was saying to Nasty earlier, you know, I'd never seen you get cut except for one time. And I'm not even sure if it was from a fight or a puck. But either way, you got cut, and it just was just a cut. There was no blood that came out of it. It was just like, do you remember that?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh man, it was just like, I've never seen anything like it. And you don't mark, you don't cut, you know, you're just
if he went into the box and he got hit a few times, he'd be just a little red. But by the time the 5 minutes were done, you're like, Scotty, he didn't even have a mark on his face. It was unbelievable, man. And you know, Gratz, like, I mean, for me, for the guys that both of you two fought, like, you're undersized to be fighting those guys. I mean, you guys fought monsters, and you both stood in there and did unbelievable. But, like, to not have any marks and to throw toe-to-toe, like, I mean, you were willing to take five to give your five. I mean, I watched that McGrattan fight in the Spectrum this morning. I forgot about that fight. I mean, you two both just pounded each. I mean, he got you a couple go, you got him, but both of you never went down. And you guys must have fought a minute, you know, over a minute. I mean, it had to be so exhausting, man. Like,
yeah, that was probably one of the best fights I had ever really been in. And it was in the American League there. And he was hungry. I was hungry. And we just went after it. And I fought him a couple times after that, and he gave it to me every other time. But that was the one time I actually hung in there with him. And it was a marathon fight for sure. All those years, and even Riley went through it all those years, being undersized. It's never easy to, but you know what? It's your job, and you do it for the boys, and you show up. And it's not whether you win or lose, because I lost 90% of my fights, I'd say, a lot of times.
I wouldn't say that.
I wouldn't say that, but maybe. But either way, it's being undersized. It's not easy, but it's showing up, and it's for the team and for the boys. It's at the end of the day, that's what mattered.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I think of you, Gratz, and like in your fights, or just like something out of a movie most of the time, where it was just like there was like this element of endurance, like fearlessness, bombs, like heavy punches. Just like relentlessness, and like it wasn't just like one every 10 fights. I feel like every fight, if not every other fight that you had, at least that I can remember, were like that, you know. Or it was just like there was no, like you say, no easy fights. It wasn't an easy 5 minutes for fighting and then let's go rest in the penalty box. Like your minutes were hard earned minutes compared to some fighters that I've seen. Like it's insane. I mean, and to do that, not only do that, you did in the American League, Coast American League, NHL, and then you went overseas in a bunch of different leagues and started beating the pants off, you know, these guys. Like, I just, you know, nothing but props. I mean, I retired when I was 28. I was fucking done with it. But you just kept getting stronger. You get in better shape, and you know what I mean? So props to you overall, because I never seen anything like it.
I appreciate it, bud. I appreciate it. That means a lot coming from you.
You remember I know you guys remember the games we had when we were the Phantoms, the 11 a.m., the school day game.
Oh, yeah.
You right off and the puck. Who did you fight? Who was that?
Mike Brown, I think, right? The one dropped him.
I'm like, it's 11:03 in the morning. And the puck drops, and you two drop the gloves. And I just remember thinking, I don't know how in the hell you're going to do this right now at 11 a.m. And you... I mean, and the kids are playing SpongeBob SquarePants. Like, what? Like, don't ruin the moment, man. But it was like, I just couldn't even imagine dropping the mitts at 11 a.m. Riles, you probably fought that game too, because you guys seemed to fight every damn game. You guys were so good.
I like 11 o'clock tillies. Get it out of the way. You don't have to worry about it.
It'd been better on a Sunday, because we could have got to McDaniels earlier and saw the second games, you know, starting at 4 instead of the 8 o'clock games. We talk about going to McDaniels. Man, that was just – those are some of the best – I mean, you just – it's almost like you just get this game over with, boys. It's Sunday, 3-3, and everybody's – you guys had to be exhausted. I know I was. I didn't do half of what you guys were doing. But I tell you what, we sure didn't get revamped when that game was over. We were heading to McDaniels to see everybody. But
you'd have no problem playing 4 and 5 if you're knowing you're going on Sunday right now.
Yeah, right? Monday's the day off. You knew that.
Yeah, exactly. Best part about it was that it wasn't just like two or three guys. It was like 90% of the team there. You know, it was something else. Because I never experienced that after that year, that, you know, that many guys from a team showed up at a bar together.
I consistently. That was a big reason why we won. I think we were so tight, even from from the oldest guy, like Slanes would be there. John Slaney was almost 38, 40 years old, and he'd be there having a time with the boys, with the 20-year-olds. Like, it makes a big difference when your team becomes that close and you guys battle and have fun together. It's you can't beat it, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I could say on a couple of teams that I played on, when the veterans connect with the rookies and the younger guys, the team, the chemistry is so much better versus like when it's like, you know, the veterans are too cool for school and those are just the rock piles. I feel like the team never connects, and I'm sure you've been on teams like that, but it separates the team where you're just like the hierarchy of veteran and rookie. But the team, like that's a perfect example that year, is that everyone was kind of like together. It was just like a nicely assembled team and everyone connected.
Yeah, I think Neil Little had a big part to do with that. Like, he was such a team guy, backup goalie, older veteran guy that everybody looked up to and always kept the room light. And he was the one at the bar, like, getting everybody laughing, smiling, and setting up team parties. Like, and to have your backup goalie or a veteran guy to do that, it just sends a message, from a positive message throughout the whole team, right?
100%. I mean, a good Neil Little story. The first night I was in Philly, I was at the old Hampton Inn, and after the night before the game, he's like, "I'll pick you up." He's like, "I'll pick you up, and we'll go to McDaniel's." It was literally first day in Philly, so he pulls up at the Hampton Inn, and I felt like, you know, let's smile. You know, the whole thing is like, I feel like I know this guy.
Yeah,
like, I feel like I've known him.
He makes you feel that way, man.
Oh yeah, getting his truck, smells like some reefer. I'm like, oh, maybe this is a little more familiar. I'm like, smells pretty good in here. He's like, yeah, you want to smoke? Sure. All right. So first day in Philly, smoking a little herb with Litz, going to the McDaniels, and the rest is history as far as you know, what went down that year. But you made a really good point, is that like I think of Neil Little as like the first guy that, like, you know, besides Nass, that welcomed me, and you know what I mean. He was like one of the, I think he's probably the oldest guy in the team. And, you know, the fact that he reached out, picked me up, and, you know, we connected on that level, like, the first day is meaningful, you know, especially for a guy that's, you know, come to a new situation and might be uncomfortable. So all that energy, it's like, what do you call it? Synergy, right? I mean, that's what good teams have, and the ones that obviously are skilled enough with that synergy are the ones that win. So, and we did.
Yeah.
Good time.
Congrats. Why don't you talk about your decision? I know you land up leaving Philly and going to Phoenix, and then you land up back in Philly, but at some point there you decided to, I say, maybe give up on the NHL dream and go overseas and make some money and play, and you know what I mean, and probably fight less and maybe live a little bit differently. You know, talk about that decision to kind of leave this North American hockey world behind and pursue that.
It was a decision that I was torn between. It's like cutting the cord with the NHL and cutting the cord on your dream, essentially. But I was up and down. I was probably playing more in the American League than I was in the NHL at the time. Still making good money, but I was getting challenged every night by all these young guys, and I had a hard time saying no. I always would just say yes, and my body was taking a toll. And then I got an offer to go to Russia. The summer before, I went in like December, but that summer I was getting enticed to go there all that whole year, and I decided to stick it out in Atlanta. I had signed in Atlanta, and I had made that team out of camp, got sent down, and I was getting challenged, literally challenged every night by like guys like Gazdick, Reeves, and they were hungry, like just like where we were when we were 20 years old, and it just kind of started just wearing it on me, more mentally than anything, just like, fuck, sure, I got to do this again. And you know what I mean? Like, and I respected all of those kids and them wanting to fight, and everybody is challenging, and that's their job. And my job at that time was to oblige them. And it's not fun to do it when you have everything at that time to lose, in a sense. Like, you have nothing to gain by beating up these rookies. You're expected to, essentially. And it was just, it kind of got old. So I got offered to go over to Russia, and Chris Simon was on that team. I knew him a little bit before, right? And Darcy Rose. So we had a bunch of tough guys. So I went over there thinking that, oh shit, I'm going to be able to play some hockey and not have to fight as much, knowing that they're there. But when I got over there, it was not the same. Where the mafia boss was the owner. And
was this the guy with the guns?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I heard, I've heard stories about him. Like, you don't have to get into that, but like, yeah, I heard he is a rodeo.
Yeah, he's crazy. So you're like a human toy to this guy. So I show up, he pretty much just bought me, I'm his toy, and he just comes down to the dressing room and he goes, Josh, go fight the goalie or you go home. So, all right, go. Robert Ash was the goalie at the time.
No.
I go, I'm not going to fight him. So I went out instead of going and running Ash. I just went and jumped someone else and got kicked out. So I didn't have to go fight the goalie. But that's just the way that was. That's just the way it was there.
Was he happy with that? Was he okay with you doing that?
Well, he didn't have a choice because I was kicked out. So the next game I had to go fight the goalie.
Oh, okay.
Oh, he did.
Okay.
But when I first got there, I thought I was going to be there going to play hockey. And it was the first five or six times on the ice, I got told to go fight. I was like, holy shit. But the money was so good. I had just left everything in the NHL, American League. So I had to stick it out. And I'm glad I did because I ended up getting to play, probably work on my game and probably help myself prolong my career a bunch of years after I got weathered that storm going to that team in Russia. But it was an experience I would never give up forever. I would do it all over again because I met a lot of good people through there. I had a lot of good times and life experience that has brought me around the world to Russia of all places to play in the second best league in the world. It is now. I don't know if it was as good back then, probably not, but the money was good. The women were good at the time too. So I had a lot of fun there. I went to another team there in the KHL with Nigel Dawes, Boshensky, and that place was ran like an NHL team in Kazakhstan, Boris Astana. And those guys are still playing like in that league because they were treated so well there. So I'm glad I got to stick it out from that first team I went. So I got to experience the real side of hockey in Astana, Boris. It was an awesome sellout, 10,000-15,000 a night there. You're treated like a king. So it was a really good experience there.
Josh, when you were there, one of our buddies, I don't know if Gratch, you may not know Dave McIsaac, but he had played for the Phantoms before. I'm not sure if you ever ran into him, but he ended up at the end of his career, he went over to Russia. And I'm not sure what level he played at. I'm not sure if it was a KHL or not. I'd have to ask him. But he was telling me their coach or owners or whatever were very strict with them. Like, they weren't supposed to go out to bars. Now, you trying to tell Mac not to go to a bar? Didn't happen. He was going, and he did. He never got sent home or anything, but he was telling me a lot of cool little stories. Were they like that with you, or did they just kind of let you, you know, do your thing as long as it wasn't anything out of, like, McDaniels? Like we were doing in McDaniel. We could have been arrested probably every Sunday. But
I should have been. Probably would have been for me. No, they were pretty lenient there in a sense. But like the owner, the boss, mob guy, he had like a village. So when we would have days off, he would have like a village with all these like guns, horses, wolves, like a big, huge, huge compound essentially. So when we would have a couple of days off, we would go out there, and he wouldn't let us leave. Like, he would just wake up, drink, wake up, shots, and wouldn't let us leave until he's finally passed out. So he wants to party for two or three days, and then we got to stay there and do it. So it was crazy. We were there for the year that Canada won the Olympics and scored.
Why is everybody going to bring that up?
Golden goal, City scored, but we were there, and I couldn't get away, and I like to have a lot of fun, but when I'm begging to get out off the compound, you know,
something's not right. Yeah, that's for sure, man.
But yeah, it was an experience, a crazy experience. I don't think he owns a team there anymore, but they were the ones where like a bunch of tough guys all the time. Yeah, Nazarov.
Before heavyweight that first year, you were with Chris Simon, wasn't that? You said Darcy Vareau. Wasn't there someone else too?
It was us three that year. Then the next year, Brandon Sugden came too.
Oh, Sugden. Yeah.
Did you play there 2 years with the?
I played for a year and a half, so one full year. But then we got told to go brawl, and we ended up getting a 15 or 18 game suspension. So
would he pay you at least? Since he was telling you.
They started a brawl against Ohms right off the draw. It was chaotic, but he had called us, and we're in Omsk at the time, and he said he wants to see a brawl. He was having a party, and all his buddies from Moscow were there. So they wanted to see us start a fight. And so Nazarov brings us into the dressing room after warm-ups, and he's like, "You, Darcy, whoever else, there's five of us." And they're like, "Start a brawl right off, or you don't go back to town and you don't get paid." So right off the bat, we started a brawl, Donnybrook, these guys. I felt like an absolute caveman doing it. It was pretty bad and embarrassing at the same time. But at that time, I wanted to get my money. I wanted to get I didn't really have a choice to do it if I wanted to get paid. And the worst part about it was, I think there was 18 games left, or I got 18 game suspension. There was 20 games left, and Nazarov, the prick he is, he bagged me for 18 straight games just for the two games that I had left.
No way.
And they were trying to get you so you just leave and wouldn't have to pay.
Oh yeah, they don't want to pay you.
Right? I got in sick shape and I just got bagged for 18 games straight. It was hell, but
you got paid, man.
Yeah.
That was wild. I remember that. Who did you grab? It was he'd played in the NHL, right? He was
Martin Skula. Yes, they were all skilled guys. They had no clue that was coming. The mob guy just having a party. He's like, "Yeah, we're just going to use our human toys here tonight."
Yeah, exactly.
So. I heard someone told me, I don't know if it's true. We got you here so we can find out, that you guys basically never lost a home game because maybe he was dishing out a little cake to the zebras there.
Yeah, well, they're not. I don't know for sure, but yeah, kind of. It was pretty shady. We'd get a lot of power plays at home, probably like triple the amount, and it was pretty camp. But that was like, now that the KHL, like the last couple of years, it's kind of legitimized itself. Like they don't have that.
Right.
There was some shady stuff going on my first year or two going on there, for sure, no question.
All right.
Yeah, I'm glad to see they clean it up a little bit. Because some of the stories that I've heard outside of your stories were, like you said, like really sketchy.
Yeah.
Or like scary. Like, you're lucky some of these guys actually make it back alive.
Yeah.
Some of the time,
getting paid in cash. And I would pour my protein powder out and put the money in, then put the protein powder back in and leave it in the hotel. So much uncertainty. The boss owned the hotel, so you never knew what who was going to come out of there. So it was, you had to be on your toes at all times for the first, my first 2 years. And it was nice to be able to get a good experience outside of that, within Kazakhstan. But it was a good chapter of the book. That was for sure.
Did you have to go back and play that team, that owner?
They had John Morasty they signed in. We had to fight him twice the next day. And then the next time we went in, he gave it, beat me up pretty good a couple of times, I had to go back there the following year after I left. They had him foaming at the mouth waiting for me.
I don't know where he is, but he's probably foaming at the mouth right now.
he could take a punch, but he could give it too. He liked doing it.
He loved it. Hey, I never seen a guy love it more than John Morasty.
Exactly. Do you guys remember when he was trying to make Norfolk, and we had that preseason game at the Skate Zone? And it was they had Downtown Brown, Mike Brown. Remember, they had Brownie, and I can't remember all their guys, but we were playing at the Skate Zone. It's packed, and he ended up with poor BJ Abel. I will say, he's grabbing, BJ's probably sweating, and he did, because, he's caught, he had never fought. And Morasty actually let him off the hook. I don't know if you guys remember, but he said, "You've never done this, have you?" And BJ's like, "No, but I got to do it." And he's like, "No, man, no." And he kind of let him off the hook. I was like, I just remember thinking, oh no, like when he grabbed poor BJ didn't know what to do, so he grabbed a hold of him, and Morasty knew he had never been. I was kind of shocked. I thought he'd fucking just pump him. And
no, but it was good times over there. I had good times with that.
And then, you play, three years maybe in the KHL, I would say off and on. I think there may have been you might have gone somewhere else in between, but Denmark, back to KHL, back to Manchester in the AHL, to Finland, I believe, France, Slovakia, Scotland, and then landed up back in the US Hockey League, South Carolina.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
How was South Kakalaki?
Oh, I loved it there. That was the end of my career. That was the last bit, and it was like coming full circle by the end of it. It was like started in the coast, ended in the coast, but that place was awesome. A great group of guys. As I was older too, and I went in there, and all the young guys were awesome. I had some of the most fun I've had in the last few years of my hockey was right there with those guys.
That's awesome. Where is that exactly? Is that in Columbia?
Charleston.
Oh, it's in Charleston. Oh, so you're at the
yeah.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, what a city.
Right
yeah.
near the Citadel, huh?
Yeah, a lot of fun there.
I was just gonna say one other little Gratz kind of funny story is. So we is the year we won. Obviously, we ended up winning that game six against Providence. And so we set up a dinner at Rock Lobster. And you guys, Stormy's the GM there. And the week before, we had had an incident where there was an individual that went to McDaniel's looking for everyone, knowing we weren't there. I say we, like you guys. Well, all of us, but the tough guys. This guy was tough guy looking for the Phantom guys. Where are they? And remember, Mike Pacitti didn't get to work with us that year because they brought Adam down from the Flyers. So Mike was in there. Of course, can't believe Mike was at the bar, old Pac-Man. I remember him calling me saying, oh, this guy came in. He's looking for everybody. And poor Pac almost fought him, and he's a big dude. He's like 6'4", this guy. And so anyway, the next week we win that series, and we may have had a couple at the Spectrum there to celebrate because we're going to the finals and everything, but we were all headed over to Rock Lobster, and we got a nice meal set up, and it's beautiful outside because, it's almost summertime. It's getting late. So I grabbed Gratz because, Gratz used to like to have a few beers and a couple drinks, and, I said, hey, Gratz said to me, or is this the guy? Is he here? And I'm like, yes, but listen, don't say anything, bud, because it's going to cause me issues at home. I don't need any issues right now. Okay, yeah, no problem. So we were eating. We probably got through the first set of appetizers, a few drinks. The lady running the place, Stormy, comes over, taps me, and goes, come here for a minute. And I'm like, oh, no. I look around. Well, Gratz isn't at the table. So she goes, what is wrong with you? I set this whole thing up for you. I told you to tell the guys, leave him alone. What happens? Someone just went up to him. And I'm like, who went up to him? And she's like, Josh. And I was like, oh, okay. So I go back over and I'm like, Gratz, what did you just do? And he's like, nothing. I just went over and said, hey, I heard you were looking for us. And the guy's obviously playing dumb. He's like, what are you talking about? He's like, yeah, Nasty said that you were blah, blah, blah. Who's Nasty? You know who Nasty is. I'm right here. You want to talk to me? And the guy's like, no problems. And I saw him. Gratz tells me, and I'm like, bro, man, you don't understand. I got to deal with this now. And he goes, sorry for partying. I miss your line all the time.
It's a trademark
line. I bought a golf hat, and it actually says on it, sorry for partying. And I wear it all the time, and I just think of Gratz because he's like, sorry for partying.
That was my line back in the day.
Yeah, it was great.
Oh, yeah. I heard that several times. Oh, man. I had a pretty good Gratz story. I don't know if you remember Gratz. We actually were in Columbus Blue Jackets camp together. We were like 18. We were the same age. Yeah. And we went to Traverse City. And then whatever played, came back, and then they were making cuts for all the guys going back to juniors. I think you let them getting cut the day before me or whatever. It was the same thing. They just, whatever. It was spaced out the timing of the flights and whatnot. But anyways, I showed up at the rink and I was like, where the hell's my shit? Like, where's my bag? I'm missing all my equipment and all this stuff. And, we'll get you new shoes. We'll get you all this stuff, blah, blah, blah. So I kind of like, all right, well, they took care of me. They helped me out. And then I forgot about it until... I think it's 3 or 4 years later, 2004, 2005, when we played together. I think it was towards the springtime because it was warm outside, and we were out there with Eags by your truck, and I see like a number 59 Columbus Blue Jackets bag, and I'm like, Gratz? He's like, is that your bag? He's like, yeah, well, I got it from camp. I'm like, I was 59 in Columbus Blue Jackets training camp. I'm like, I'm pretty sure that's my bag. Well, the long and short of it is, Gratz just fucking when they released all the guys going back to juniors, he just grabbed bag. I don't know how many grabbed two bags or whatever, but you stockpiled. Smart decision. Grab my shit.
I didn't think I was ever going back to that.
What's that?
I said, I didn't think I was ever going back to Columbus. So I just took it.
Never thought that was going to get through. Oh, man, that was pretty good, though.
Yeah, we got a good laugh out of that one, right?
Yeah, I know. It was pretty good. Yeah. That was a pretty cool experience, though. I think that was like, I mean, that's when I started to kind of follow you, because we were kind of, you know, I guess 2 years later, kind of competing, you know, in that same world. But, you know, recognizing that you basically started to take on that role at that training camp,
yeah,
at that tournament in Traverse City, hey?
Yeah, it was because in juniors, I think we were both similar players in juniors, and we put some numbers up, and we go to those camps, and you either kind of fight to get noticed, or you score goals. Yeah. And I wasn't scoring any goals at those camps. Good competition. So that was kind of after that. It was like kind of in a sense that you're going to have to do that to become a player and get there. We both were grinding in that sense and had to do it the hard way moving up. But that was a good experience going to that Traverse City tournament, though, that's for sure.
It was a cool experience. Yeah, there was a lot of fighters kind of go through that, and Boogeyman, and you know, several others. David Kazoka, I remember. I think the one game I remember was against like Kovalchuk. That's how long ago it was, when it was rookie year. And Danny Heatley, I believe, too. Right? Were they not both out there?
Yeah, they both were.
I'm like, wow, what world am I living in here? I'm trying to learn what I have to do to play in the NHL, and these guys are zipping by me, scoring at will. But it was a pretty amazing experience for sure. I just want to ask you though, Gratz, you're from Brantford, right?
Yeah.
Did you ever meet Walter Gretzky or Gretzky's?
Yeah, I met him lots of times. He was always around the rink as a kid and whatever. And all his golf tournaments, Wayne Gretzky's golf tournaments, he was always there too. So I met him quite a bit. And yeah, he was an assistant coach for my like minor hockey team the 1 year for a while.
Oh, really?
So, yeah.
I think I crossed paths with him at some point.
Yeah, he was really well respected, obviously, and connected through the whole community in Brantford. So.
That's what I heard.
It was definitely disappointing and sad loss for everybody there. He was a great man.
Yeah, that's what I heard. You keep hearing stories now that it happened. It's like you hear more and more positive stories about him. I didn't realize how much of an impact he had on so many other hockey players outside of Wayne's and his family.
He would just be around the rink picking up pucks, like just being a rink rat, essentially. Just loved being around the kids and always smiling, taking pictures with the kids around Brantford. What was called the Gretzky Center is what their rink is. But he was always around and in the community. So he's definitely going to be missed around Brantford, that's for sure.
Yeah,
I bet. Yeah. It's tough loss for sure. World needs more people like that.
Yeah,
I agree. Sure. Just a well-rounded, well-hearted, big-hearted guy. It was just a smile on his face all the time. So,
yeah. Right on, brother. Well, again, we appreciate it.
All right, boys.
We'll get pumped up tomorrow. Gotta get together, bro. Like, fucking close. You're too close, man.
For the next little while, for sure. Now that our season.
Let us know if you ever come down. Maybe we'll set up Nasty's little pod station there and do it face-to-face. I think it's always better.
All right, boys. Yeah, a little more fun that way. But all right, boys. I appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, bro.
That episode was brought to you by Settlemyer Skate Sharpening. For the best skate sharpening in town and all your hockey needs, visit SettlemyerSkateSharpening.com. And Body Check Wellness, for any CBD and functional mushroom products, we got you covered. Check out BodyCheckWellness.com. Wanted to thank our awesome guest, Josh Grattan. Really appreciate him coming on and sharing a little bit of his story and what he's up to now, and some stories throughout his hockey career. What a beauty Gratz is. Nice to see him doing well. And what a hell of a career, man, to slug it out the old-fashioned way and play around the world.
He did.
Man, props to him.
He did, man. And you know, like, you know, Riles, you played with him. I'd love to know how many fights he's had.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Over, yeah, I mean, this guy, he had a target on his back from when he came from the coast to the American League, like we talked about with him during the podcast. But the funniest thing to me was, obviously, we left out a few stories that, you know, he said, say whatever you want, which I thought was hilarious because no one else has said that. But
yeah.
The funniest thing to me is sitting there and he's really got himself together, man. I mean, this guy is coaching, running a whole program, and it makes you proud of the guy. Because if you had asked us back in 2005, you think Gratz will ever run a team or be a coach? You'd be like, what? He'd be lucky to be around, in 2021. He's an awesome guy. He was an awesome teammate, awesome guy in the locker room, and funny guy. He always had us laughing. I mean, he was just a mess in a good way.
Yeah.
Yeah,
no, for sure. It's awesome to see him doing well. He looks vibrant. He looks healthy. Like you said, back 05, the old Gratz, like he said, you would never think that he could turn his life around the way he has. And
right.
Again, even extend his career, 16 years is a long time, even if you're a skill guy, let alone being a physical, legitimate fighter. And, we talked about it. There's no easy 5-minute majors for that guy. I mean, he earned those minutes, hard earned minutes. But the fact that he's able to kind of find, that thinking of staying in tip-top shape and, later in his career to prolong his career was a beautiful thing. And the fact that he's able to kind of pull out of some of that darkness he talked about post-retirement obviously is amazing. What a great teammate. It was nice to reconnect with him because I haven't spoken with him for a while. So,
Yeah, it's sad. It makes you sad when anyone goes through that, but especially when someone he was having that tough of a time, man, because, unfortunately we've seen some guys take a way out, that you don't want. And, he didn't, thank God. And he looks great, man.
Yeah, he really does.
And he's another guy. Like, I think everyone we talk to, we could probably spend 3 to 4 hours, going over stories and stuff, but, really proud of him, man. And like you said, it's a hard way to make a living. You know that. He did it for 16 years, and he took 3 to give 1 good one.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he really would, or 1 for 1, but that's a hard way to it's a hard way to go, man.
Yeah, that's the truth, man. I've never seen a guy eat a punch like he has, and he did. And not just like once in a while. It was, like you said, every night. It was gobbling up punches like it was his dinner.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, but awesome to see him, pull out of it on the right side of things, and a lot of guys don't. Yep. I think this type of conversation is far too often talked about. We had one with Bundy and right. Fridgy, and it seems to be overly common, unfortunately. So now he's doing some positive things with his platform, coaching, as well as helping some other hockey players out as well. So beautiful to see.
Yeah, it is. Really is.
So be sure to tune in next week for episode 14 of Nasty Knuckles. That's about it for tonight. Take care, knuckleheads, and check out nastyknuckles.com for all our new merch that's coming out and that sweet-ass jersey that Nasty's rocking.
Oh, yeah. They're reversible.
Yes, they
threw
are.
Threw the orange on. I'm not a big orange guy, but this kind of...
Looks good on you, brother.
I like it.
Yeah.
Thanks, bro. You don't have your glasses on, so it's tough to see. I don't either.
All right.
See you, knuckleheads, man.
Till next week, knuckleheads.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great, too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.